Hi, Seth Hutt.
Hi, Robert.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Thank you. I'm not too bad. Let me introduce us. I'm Robert Wright of Blogging Hits TV. You are Seth Hutt Guvanch, although I'm sure I've mispronounced it. You are in Istanbul.
Yes.
Thanks for joining us on short notice. And you teach international relations at Kadir Has University. Is that the way it's pronounced?
Yes, that was perfect pronunciation.
Oh, all right, thank you. And, you know, you're, of course, there's a lot going on in Istanbul and elsewhere in Turkey. This is, it's Monday, it's late afternoon your time. Can you start off by telling us, you know, what your sense of things is? Does it feel like things are winding down? Are they? Is there a threat of them spinning out of control? Do they seem under, you know, what's your sense of the momentum at this point?
Well, I mean, what we are experiencing is defies description or prediction, unfortunately. It may go either way. You know, things might wind down or it may go out of hand. But a very interesting development we just heard over the on the TV that the leader of the main opposition party requested an emergency appointment with the president of the republic. So this meeting might be crucial in this in shaping the outcome. You know which way the events will evolve, will unfold.
And down. If I could just interject for people who aren't familiar with Turkish politics, the president is not the person who's been getting most of the. He's not the prime minister who is Erdogan. He is Abdullah Gül,
exactly.
Who is in the same party. Has, of course, a less powerful position than the prime minister. He's in the same party, but he has sounded to me like a little bit more of a voice of moderation than Prime Minister Erdogan. Is that right?
This is exactly what a president is supposed to be. Indeed, mm-hmm. A president has to be a neutral political figure. So as soon as he was elected president, Abdullah Gül severed his links with the party. So he doesn't represent the party. He represents the whole republic or the whole nation. Therefore, this is his constitutional duty to represent the whole nation and therefore to act as a force of moderation. And in two instances, he has tried to do that. You know, by displaying a more accommodating, more conciliatory tone as regards to the popular protests on the streets of Istanbul and in other parts of Turkey, etc. A prime minister has left the country for a trip to North Africa and the Middle East for 4 days. And
so he did go ahead with that, didn't he?
Yeah, he did.
That's surprising to me.
Well,
but
maybe it's a blessing in disguise because in the last couple of days, many people think that he has not given the right messages to the public. So in his absence, I mean, the president might play, I mean, a crucial role in calming down the tension and displaying some sort of moderation, bringing some sort of moderation into the picture and preventing things or demonstrations spinning out of control, as you put it.
Okay, and so now the head of the opposition party is asking to have a meeting with the president in the absence, at a time when the prime minister is out of the country.
The main opposition party has a right, has a constitutional right to ask for an appointment anytime he or she wants from the president. So he's exercising this right. I don't think he's taking advantage of the prime minister's absence from the scene, but he decided, probably the main opposition party, Kılıçdaroğlu, decided that it would be futile to appeal to prime minister who already adopted a stronger stance. Each time he spoke, I mean, his reaction was expressed in stronger terms. And therefore, Kılıçdaroğlu probably decided that it would be best in the interest of the country to appeal directly to the president. And many intellectuals especially have been calling president to step in to do something about what's going on in the for the sake of public peace and public order.
Okay. And do you think something constructive could come out of this meeting?
Well, I think president has already softened the political environment by stating that the message was taken and democracy is not about elections only. It's more than that, which is kind of just the opposite what prime minister has been asserting for the last couple of days.
Right. And maybe here we could just review a little for people who have been paying real close attention. I noticed in following Twitter that there are a number of Americans who kind of thought this was kind of another Arab Spring type thing. I heard Erdogan being referred to loosely as a dictator. And I want to say there are some distinctions here. I mean, he is a legitimately elected leader in what has been a democracy for quite some time, although, of course, in an earlier period, it was not uncommon for the military to step in and take over when the military thought the democracy got out of hand. Those days seem to be over, though, and so he has been elected, and his idea of governance is you elect the government, and then you shut up, until the next election, kind of. Mm-hmm. And he's not big into participatory democracy. But he was elected, and I gather if an election were held tomorrow, he would probably remain in power, right?
Exactly. There is no problem with that. Probably he will be able to maintain, preserve his core constituency, and he will probably win a very comfortable win in the elections. And no one is optimistic. No one is dreaming about Erdogan stepping down as a result of those public demonstrations. And that's where the current movement is set apart from the Arab Spring. Turkey is a democracy despite its flaws, and we have an open society, in contrast to those countries which have experienced their share of spring. So we have an open society, but these events have exposed the weaknesses of Turkish democracy. That's the main observation I can make. Trying to draw parallels to the Arab Spring might be unfair for those protesters and for the power, for the political party ruling the party. I think it's about expanding or shrinking the boundaries of public debate and political participation. The developments in the last couple of months have convinced some segments of the society that they're losing their space, the public space. Mm-hmm. In other words, some people think that the secular space has been shrinking as a result of measures adopted by the Erdogan's overwhelming majority in the parliament. He was able to pass, mm-hmm. a number of controversial legislations very quickly in the parliament. And this lack of input, lack of deliberation, I think, for some people is unacceptable, and it's a flaw in a democracy like Turkey, and it has to be rectified. And some people took it to the streets as the only venue for expressing their anger and disappointment.
Right. And another little piece of review for people who don't follow Turkey closely. Of course, Erdogan represents in part a religious constituency. He is himself, I guess a pretty devout Muslim, and this is something relatively new. I mean, he's been in power about a decade, but before that, Turkey had been very determinedly secular, and there are people who are very much part of secular Turkey, and I would guess that you identify yourself with that part of Turkey, although you can correct me if I'm wrong.
No, I can. I call myself a secular Turk, pro-Western, if I may.
Right.
But on the... I mean... Yeah, you have to be honest with your identity. But Erdogan is a devout Muslim, and it was not a problem until his last election. Mm-hmm. I think, and especially he aspires to be an executive president. Currently we have a president, we have a system where president is the titular head of the government, the state. The real executive is prime minister, so we have a parliamentary system. So mm-hmm. I think prime minister has been contemplating to turn Turkey from a parliamentary democracy to a presidential system where he will be able to control the political life with not many checks and balances. In other words, he is... It is feared that he is trying to concentrate, gather all the power, all executive power within his hands. And indeed, he expressed his disapproval of this checks and balances. He sees them as as impediments to his zeal for implementing, how should I say, spectacular projects or for the political progress of the country. But on the other hand, in a democracy, in a healthy democracy, you need to have all these checks and balances, including mass media, which has not fared very well in the recent, in the case of recent demonstrations in Turkey. I think it was one of the weaknesses that was exposed in Turkish democracy in the last couple
right.
of days.
Right. I gather that, there was a TV channel, a kind of Kemalist channel that covered the demonstrations pretty closely, but a lot of the TV channels didn't, and I think many of the newspapers did. Can you explain to me the pressures that keep some of these TV channels from covering this? It's not that the government directly controls them, but the form of pressure is more subtle than that, right?
And mostly in the form of self-censorship. Because those mainstream TV channels, most of them are part of bigger business conglomerates who have different business interests, and a lot of them have to work with the government. Therefore, airing or covering those demonstrations might result in financial or economic losses, or maybe even retribution from the government. Therefore, they decided to keep, how should I say, they decided to keep their audiences uninformed for some time. Now they're back in the game, but the first 3 days, I think, the mainstream media has had its image tarnished very much. They lost their reliability and credibility to a great extent.
So this may be a healthy development in that sense, right? They may perform better in the future.
Exactly. I'm an incurable optimist as regards to democracy in Turkey. So this is I tend to see this as a blessing in disguise. This showed that the attempt to control media might backfire and might undermine the credibility of the very media a government might be trying to control. Therefore, that showed us the limits of control over information through mass media in a modern society, in a vibrant society like Turkey.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, can you explain kind of the I think somewhat complex composition of the protest movement? I mean, it's not, we mentioned that there are definitely a number of secular liberals who are unhappy with various things the government has done. There are people who fear religion playing too large a role in policy. There are recent restrictions on how late alcohol can be sold and so on. But that's not the only group that is part of this protest, right?
No. That represents part of the picture, but we're talking about a movement which has attracted a diverse group of people from different walks of life, from different political affiliations, and pursuing different agendas. And the fear is that some better organized groups might try to hijack the movement. So the diversity, its biggest advantage, but also its biggest disadvantage, because it lacks a unifying political theme or goal around which all these groups can organize themselves. Therefore, that's where the risk lies as regards to this movement going out of hand. That's the problem, but that's an advantage because the protesters represents a wide spectrum of the Turkish society. But basically, it's the youth. It's the urban youth,
Okay.
And it's an expression of anger over being sidelined, over being ignored by the government in making crucial decisions which will have an effect, which have had an effect on their daily lives. And that's the reason why it's predominantly urban youth.
Okay. And then in addition, so what are some of the other elements? I mean, I gather that there are some people who are Kemalists in the sense that they actually would like a return to the days when the military was the ultimate source of power in politics, right?
Yeah.
Are they taking advantage of this, I gather?
Well, they would love to. Some of those groups would love to do that. Indeed, I myself saw a few messages in the social media that some people went to bed on the first night of the demonstrations with the hope that they would see the troops and the tanks on the streets mm-hmm. to take over the situation. But I don't think this will happen. This will ever mm-hmm. happen in Turkey today. So some people are, you know, dreams like that. Some groups, which political groups, which will never win a majority of votes in an election, also might be, you know, trying to take advantage of anything that might happen. We did not have any fatalities, thankfully, until today. But
you did. There was a fatality today. Is that right?
Yeah, because somebody tried to run over or accidentally ran over three demonstrators, and one was. One died in hospital, unfortunately. So
who ran over them? Did the police run over them?
No, it was not the police. A private driver. We don't know. It is not definitely established whether it was, you know, deliberately done mm-hmm. or not. But we have a fatality, but not directly related to the clashes or the violent the police's handling of the situation. Indeed, mm-hmm. The driver was apprehended by the police on the scene. But we have mm-hmm. a fatality. Yes.
And then these football players, much has been written about how these soccer fans or football fans who normally hate each other because the team rivalries are so intense, they are united in opposition and united in protest. I mean, are they people who basically to some extent just don't like the idea of bars closing earlier or what?
Well, honestly, I don't know their motivation, but it might be related to that. But soccer fans have been subjected to tear gas during the games very intensively lately. So
to keep them from fighting with one another?
One another, you know, to suppress their demonstrations during the games. But so they have had more than their fair share of the tear gas. So this mm-hmm. might be one of the factors that drove them into taking part in such demonstrations too.
Okay. Now, there's an irony here that I think helps kind of illuminate an interesting feature of Prime Minister Erdogan's constituency, which is, you know, on the one hand, you hear that the protests are motivated by secular people who fear too much religious influence in the public sphere. On the other hand, the thing that they were ostensibly protesting, the thing that set this off, was in a certain sense too much commercialization, right? Mm-hmm. And Erdogan, I gather, what has held him in power is he has taken, on the one hand, a lot of grassroots support from religious people, especially in Anatolia, and he has put that together with support from commercial enterprises that derives from his economic and trade policies, right?
Well, yes. Too much commercialization is a good way of explaining the causes of what's going on in Turkey right now. And he has too many big ideas. The problem is the public or the segment of the society which has not voted for him has not been consulted on such big projects, which, again, will affect their daily lives, such as the third bridge. Naming the third bridge is a different issue. Or demolishing the Gezi Park, where everything started, indeed. So all these commercialization and building large shopping malls and kind of distorting the city's fabric caused this kind of reaction. I mean, it's one of the reasons why public reacted. Mm-hmm. We're losing our forest green areas one by one, although Prime Minister Erdogan prides himself with planting more trees than ever in and around Istanbul, and he has a point in there, but we're talking about preserving the existing green areas in Istanbul, and there is very few of them, and we're talking about very small patches, very small plots of land, and some people are genuinely trying to keep those areas intact or, intact from too much commercialization.
Uh-huh. Okay. Do you anticipate this leading to any significant changes of policy? I mean, Erdogan himself has sounded very resistant to any change. Almost the only accommodating thing he said is that the police went too far in that first night of protests and using tear gas. He sounds, so do you anticipate changes in policy anywhere, whether on the specific issue of this development in the park or more broadly in how assertive he is with his policy agenda?
He sounds assertive, and he's grown assertive. Indeed, his first public message was more conciliatory, more toned down than his next messages. You know, in his initial address, he admitted that the police might have used too much tear gas, etc. And he even mentioned that one of his projects involves building an opera house in Taksim, etc. So those kind of things were to appeal to people who normally would not vote for him. But in his subsequent addresses, he did not mention any of those. And I think his priority is to maintain his core constituency, rally right around him. Therefore, he's trying to play up the involvement of the main opposition party, those extremist groups. And some of them are part of the movement, undeniably. But I suspect that they are enjoying an influence on the right overall course of the event. So his priority to keep his core constituency intact.
Right.
But we may see, we will definitely see a change of air in Turkish politics because people are demanding participation and the element of fear is gone. People no longer fear to go on the streets to express their dissatisfaction, their anger, and their political choices, which is a novelty. I mean, I have never seen anything in Turkey like this before. This was unprecedented, and for the first time we see grassroots political movements where most political parties have failed to come up with coherent agendas to compete with the ruling party. In that respect, again, a part of the public seems to have gone ahead of the political parties and decided to take the matters into their own hands. In terms of policy outcomes, in the medium term, Prime Minister might change his stand, but this is going to take some time. So even his decision to remove the police forces from Taksim was a big step. It has to be admitted. So he doesn't budge he doesn't budge very easily, and the Taksim decision was again a kind of unprecedented as far as domestic politics is concerned. But in coming days, and depending on the outcome of this meeting with the president and the main opposition leader, and the future role president will choose to play, might have an impact on the policy issues.
Okay, and when you say there was no precedent for this kind of demonstration of protest, I mean, that goes way back, right? It isn't just that during the Erdogan regime they've been afraid to do it. It's just has not been part of Turkish politics in modern Turkey, I gather, right?
No. Indeed, I mean, the Taksim, you know, the downtown square, has a political symbolic significance. On May the 1st, 1977, the workers' demonstration there, I mean, to celebrate the May Day, was kind of resulted in a massacre of the people gathered there. And since then, since 1977, Taksim was largely off limits for public demonstrations. The only exception was last year when government decided to let labor unions to gather at Taksim to celebrate the May Day. But this year, they did not give permission and they suppressed police used, again, very harsh measures to suppress groups which tried to go to Taksim Square to celebrate the May Day. I think with this movement, Taksim Square itself is no longer off limits to public.
Or to was people. It a military government that in power in 1977 that repressed the demonstration?
No. It was not a military government, and those were the days of social unrest, political polarization,
right.
Politically motivated killings, etc. But after 1977, and it was kind of off limits. And 3 years later, we had the third military coup in the modern Turkish history,
mm-hmm.
and therefore the political the symbolic significance of the Taksim Square as an off limits venue for public demonstration is gone. And to me, I think it is one of the most striking consequences of what mm-hmm. has happened in the last couple of days in Turkey.
Okay. Now,
so in
one
other
thing
words,
we haven't...
In other words, people reclaimed Taksim Square after many years of absence.
Okay. We haven't talked about the issue of the jailing of a number of journalists under the Erdogan regime. That gets a lot of attention among Westerners in commenting about this protest. I'm wondering, is it a big part of the protests themselves? Is it much of a motivation for the protests?
I suspect the jailed journalist would not be as big a consideration in the thinking of those demonstrators as those journalists who lost their jobs, mm-hmm. allegedly under government's pressure.
So there's two problems. There's the actual jailing, and then there's journalists who lose their jobs. And is that a result of the dynamic you referred to earlier, where these media organizations are part of conglomerates that want to stay in the good graces of the government for commercial reasons?
Exactly. Many prominent journalists, and some of them had been supporters of Erdogan and AKP for the reforms they introduced in Turkey, but they have turned kind of... not against, but they have turned critical of Erdogan, and some of those prominent journalists lost their jobs. And mm-hmm. I think the contribution of such developments is greater than those jailed journalists. Mm-hmm. They might be a consideration, but compared to those who lost their jobs, who were considered to be silenced by the government, I think might have played a bigger role. At least this is my reading of the situation.
And as for the jailed journalists, I think many of them were jailed under one of two rationales. Either they were thought to be too close to military people who allegedly were too supportive of military people who allegedly were plotting to take over the government or had plotted or something, or they were thought to be supporting what at that time was a violent Kurdish resistance, although there's been progress in bringing that bringing that chapter of Turkish history to an end, I think. Have those jailings continued over the last year or in principle, if indeed the Kurdish problem is solved and if indeed military takeover becomes less and less of a threat, you would think that there's much less motivation to jail journalists if indeed these are the reasons they were being jailed. What has that looked like lately, say over the last year or so? Have more and more journalists been jailed or what?
I think that process of jailing journalists has lost its momentum. I mean, we don't hear that many cases. Honestly, I don't have the numbers, so I cannot speak with mm-hmm. authority on this account. But recently, the issue was prominent journalists losing their jobs.
Mm-hmm.
That was the issue. I mean, jail journalists, they've been in jail for some time, and especially in the last couple of rounds, the Kurdish or those who were considered to have affiliations with the outlawed PKK or KCK type organizations were jailed. That was the last round. And indeed, I remember now, about 6 months ago, there was another wave of arrests which targeted the so-called the supporters of the so-called DHKPC, the leftist organization which was responsible for the bombing of the US embassy in Ankara, for instance. But that was the last round I could remember.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And these journalists who were fired...
They were not journalists. They were lawyers. I'm so sorry. But,
okay,
yeah,
okay.
Sorry.
The journalists who are fired, do they wind up often finding another place to work? It's just that it's a... In other words, they keep doing their journalism, it's just that it's less prominent now?
The irony is that, yeah, they left their jobs in mainstream media, but most of them have become internet journalists, contributing to internet media or internet digital media. Most of them have jobs in smaller newspapers, independent media companies, etc. They're still around. But they lost their jobs in the mainstream media. They're still around. Yes, I mean,
okay.
They're still around, and yes, most of them are part of the digital media, and they have become very efficient Twitter writers lately, and effective Twitter writers. Yes.
Okay. Good. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, thank you. I guess my last question is just again. You as someone who had your own criticisms of the government and I guess would like to see it pay some attention to some of the messages being sent by the protesters, I gather there's some things about this thing that you like, but I also gather that there are probably things that worry you a little about the possibility of this getting out of hand, right? I mean, is it...
More than a little, indeed. I mean, honestly, we're sitting on a fence now. I mean, it may go either way. Things may go better.
And what's the worst-case scenario you worry about? What would happen in that?
Well, you know, Prime Minister, on his way to Tunisia, I think, or Algeria, he mentioned that he's keeping his supporters at home. So... If Erdogan's supporters decide or encourage to take it to the street and if, may God forbid, violent clashes occur, take place between his supporters and the protesters, then the situation will be very difficult to sort out.
Right, because these would be kind of different socioeconomic groups fighting one another. And I've got to say,
I have to interrupt here. They are getting different representations of what is going on. Erdogan's constituency is getting, you know, the images of those extremist groups. They're getting images of vandalism, etc. Whereas the other part of the media are portraying a much more acceptable side of the picture, etc. So. Two different messages are being broadcast to people in Turkey, and that has become an issue of division in and of itself. Mm-hmm. So there is a danger here.
And Erdogan has himself been accentuating the negative portrait. I gather that recently he suggested that it's foreign manipulation that's behind these demonstrations or something, right? And
yes. The foreign elements, foreign involvement he has mentioned. And I can partly understand his frustration because the country has just received the rating from international rating agencies that, you know, you can invest in Turkey. Today, Istanbul Stock Exchange went down significantly.
Yeah.
So if I were... running this country, I would feel kind of, you know, uneasy about what happened. So I would be making such associations as well, because just when the country was about to take off economically, this happened. So partly I can understand, I can relate to his sense of betrayal or this.
But, you know, by the same token, because he very much wants to stay in the good graces of the international economic community, I am just surprised that he's being so confrontational about this rather than accommodating. And you know, I mean, saying things like, well, if you get 1,000 supporters out, I'll get 100,000 of my people. You know, that's almost encouraging exactly the kind of thing you fear. And for him to say, well, we'll instead of building a shopping mall, we'll build a mosque, right? I mean...
He spelled that out. He said they would be building a mosque in the neighborhood.
Right.
So, but I think, I mean, in the same speech, he offered something to the secular segment, an opera house. And... the mosque to his constituency.
I see.
But I think in the last couple of in his next addresses, he emphasized the mosque element more than the opera element. Indeed, he did not mention about the opera house anymore. I know we're out of time, but I would like to have a concluding note, if you allow me.
Sure.
Okay. I'm an international relations professor, and I believe my country's, Turkey's, comparative advantage in its region is its attempt to create an open society. So we have to stay on track with becoming an open society. And in the last couple of years, government under Tayyip Erdogan has given misleading messages that Turkey might have been off track with this pursuit of becoming an open society. I hope, and I pray that these demonstrations will help us put Turkey back on track with this process of becoming an open society, and therefore maintain its competitive advantage in its region, and eventually become a full-fledged democracy.
I hope so. I think Turkey has the opportunity to play a uniquely constructive role in international relations by virtue of its position between kind of the West and the Islamic world. So I hope you're right. And thanks so much, Sedat, for taking the time to join us. And I hope you'll come back and do this again sometime.
Okay. Thank you, Robert, for giving me the opportunity.
My pleasure. Thanks.